today?
Good, Mike. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm just going to give you a couple of seconds for everybody's audio to connect.
Okay.
And then we'll be ready to go.
We're all on.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Ginger. Hi, how are you?
I guess I had my...
Hey Robert, how you doing today? Air conditioning and heat. Try one other thing, let me know. The fancy fancy microphone, and I'm using the cheap one on the laptop.
Okay. That always works, I'll tell you.
The May 27th, 2020 meeting of the County of San Luis Obispo Health Commission. Just a few housekeeping items to commissioners. Please ensure that your device's microphone is enabled or you have called in using the phone number provided. Please mute your microphone except when you would like to speak on a topic. When you would like to speak on a topic, please verbally indicate that you would like to speak and then wait to be recognized by the Health Commission Chair, Mary Jean Sage, before you begin speaking on the topic. To guests and the general public, to view a copy of the agenda for this meeting, please Google County of San Luis Obispo Health Commission, and that will take you to our homepage. From the homepage, you'll be able to access agenda, meeting minutes, and also a link to the broadcast of this meeting, which if you're hearing my voice right now, you don't need that link. But Also, the agenda packet will take you through the steps of how to leave public comment during the meeting, which would be via email at mcouglin@co.slo.ca.us. And I will like to introduce, because we are doing a virtual meeting, I'm going to conduct a roll call right now to indicate who is present at this meeting. If you are present when I call your name, please say hello. And I think we might have Susan on. Hold on 1 second. I do not know who that is. Let me just message him. I'll hold on 1 second. Sorry about that. So Mary Jean Sage.
Thank you, Mike. I will go ahead and call the meeting to order. And thank you all for being with us here tonight. I'm glad we can all remember what each other looks like. It's been a while since we've seen anybody, as far as that goes, but thank you for taking part this evening. So our first order of business is public comment. Because we don't have public with us here this evening, I will ask Mike to read any public comment that we have received.
Okay, we have received two public comments, and I will read each of them separately. The first public comment is from Neil Langford. The public comment starts as, please close La Grande track to vehicular use. A recent Harvard University study shows that the detrimental health impact of COVID-19 is greater on those whose air quality is diminished due to particulate matter. When health in this manner is threatened, the California Coastal Commission, in an amendment to its coastal permit, recommended that SLO County use its police powers to enact a temporary moratorium on vehicular activity in the ODSVRA. That time to act is now. The APCD conducted studies that showed that increased PM is a secondary effect of the crust braking actions of vehicles. San Luis Obispo is the only county in the state having coastal dunes where there is a health danger downwind. We are the only county whose coastal dunes, especially those on the La Grande track, are ravaged by vehicular activity. The dangerously high levels of particulate matter will continue until the dune crust heals. In the present health crisis, please do not continue our county's historical preference for off-road recreation over protecting the health of its citizens. We cannot go backwards. Do not open those gates. And that is public comment from Neil Langford. Public comment two is... is from Eric Greening. The public comment starts, hello, it has come to my attention that a special meeting of your commission has been called for this evening. I would like to encourage your commission to support locally based planning and self-determination to the maximum extent feasible. Given the much greater thought and study that went into the county's START framework, now inactivated due to state preemption, for cautious step-by-step emergence from stay-at-home compared to the state plan. The psychological impact of protracted stay-at-home orders on everyone from children long denied seeing their friends to elders experience isolation, much as much of health issues as the vital risk of supposedly drive such policies. I would call your attention to a study published in The Lancet entitled The Psychological Impact of Quarantine and How to Reduce It. Protracted quantities of intermittent goals have particularly dire consequences. In that connection, while the county's START framework has restrained socializing as businesses open, the state plan differs from the end of stay at home until phase four. Even though such businesses as bars and tattoo parlors open during phase three, are we to believe that visiting an isolated relative or a friend is more risky than going to a bar? I support allowing socializing in small numbers among people who know each other for ease in contact tracing if needed in the earliest possible phases to our reopening plan, with incentives for socializing to occur outdoors given the considerable lessened risk of viral transmission outdoors compared to indoors. COVID science is brand new and just emerging, but the studies that point to the wisdom of encouraging people to be outdoors as much as possible come from two countries which the pandemic peaked early, China and Japan. Both appear in the MedRx4. The Chinese study is entitled Indoor Transmission of SARS-CoV-2, and the Japanese study is entitled Closed Environments Facilitate Secondary Transmission of Coronavirus Disease. Both indicate the risk of transmission is orders of magnitude less outdoors than indoors. The WHO scientific brief modes of transmission of virus containing COVID-19 implications for IPC precaution recommendations also points to the lack of airborne transmission. In other words, for people to be sharing outdoor space, whether passing each other on a trail or dining al fresco, is far safer than most routine indoor gatherings, especially when the latter subject one to contact with surfaces that could be virally contaminated. The county should support efforts such as the City of San Luis Obispo to add to the outdoor space available for dining and strolling, and should look to allowing outdoor jobs, shopping, and dining before allowing their indoor counterparts. It is also clearly counterproductive to close outdoor parks and common spaces, even if a few people may be observed not socially distancing them. Closure only adds to the crowding pressure on the open spaces that remain to people. We do not treat other public commons by punishing the innocent. Speeding is dangerous and can lethally endanger non-speeders. That doesn't lead to closure to all users of highways, which some people speed. The speeding itself is addressed, not the place that it happens. Frankly, some public policies seem to be driven more by panic than by science. Skeptics of policies intended to address COVID-19 are not necessarily anti-science in the same way as are the deniers of human agency in climate change. Peer-reviewed climate science has been accumulating for decades, while COVID-19 science is brand new. Many of the policies being implemented in support of response to COVID-19 depend not on data but on models, which are notoriously vulnerable to inaccuracy or even one variable is mischaracterized or ignored. Although I would encourage incentives for people to occupy whatever outdoor space can be safely opened, this encouragement does not extend the vehicular vehicular recreation. Due to the particulate pollutants that this activity generates, I reference the study from Harvard's Department of Biostatistics and the T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Exposure exposure, air pollution, and COVID-19 mortality in the United States, while actual viral transmission via particulates is not documented outcomes of the disease among those exposed to the virus and are far more dire in areas subject to significant particulate pollution. I would urge that the county, for the least of the duration of the declared emergency, close La Grande Tract, which is county-owned, to all vehicular use, thereby protecting the most emissive area of the ODSVRA from destabilization of the sand. Doing so could save more lives among those living downwind. I would also support efforts joining with other counties, if needed be, to influence, pressure, and confront the state in seeking maximum possible local self-determination based on local conditions. In Dr. Bornstein, we have had a true and conscientious professional who has steered a prudent course, avoiding the extremes of panic-driven endless lockdown on the one hand and the heedless swift reopening on the other. I would far rather trust her, our local decision makers, than government addicted to rule by decree. Than a governor addicted by rule by decree. He showed autocratic tendencies before the viral emergency washed over us, as evident by his insistence on approving PG&E's bankruptcy plan, even though the law gives him no such authority, and believing that your commission can play an indispensable role in monitoring our local response to evolving conditions and helping direct our responses and policies going forward. And that was public comment from Eric Greening. And that is the end of public comment.
Okay, thank you. For those of you who submitted public comment, thank you, Mike, for going over that with us. I assume you'll send that out to each of us following today's meeting, and we'll take a look at the public comments. Next item on our agenda is updates from any of our previous topics from our previous meetings. I know that a lot of things have been in recess temporarily. I don't know that we have any updates from any of the other meetings, and of course we missed last month's meeting either. But if anybody has any updates, just let me know, and certainly we'd like to hear from you. If not, we'll move on to
I believe you may have froze, Mary Jean. Technology is a wonderful thing. Give me one second. Mary Jean had a computer issue. She'll be calling in using the phone line. Hello, Mary Jean, do we have you?
You have me, yes. Sorry about that, you guys.
And I believe we were going through item number three, updates from previous meetings.
Right. I don't believe we have any updates unless one of the commissioners has something. And if so, let me know right now and jump in and start with that. Otherwise, we will move on, and we are ready for the health agency report. And so I'll introduce Dr. Rick Rosen, who is here on behalf of Dr. Bornstein this evening, and he'll give us an update on what's been going on. Dr. Rosen.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. So I'll start with COVID-19 by the numbers. To date, the county of San Luis Obispo has had 266 total cases. Of those, 110 have occurred in Paso Robles, so that is clearly our hot spot. 236 individuals have recovered, and we've had one death. Currently, there are three individuals in the hospital, and two of those are in the intensive care unit. In terms of recent developments, thanks in large part to a lot of hard work on the part of Dr. Bornstein, we successfully tested for a variance in California's resilience roadmap, which allowed us to enter into accelerated stage two, which helps us in terms of opening some businesses. We continue to do work related to guidances for various sectors. The latest guidance that we've been working on relates to childcare, summer programs, and summer school. That is currently on hold, awaiting the state's guidance on those topics, and that is expected out by the end of this week. So hopefully you will see more on that, I would guess, on Friday. The next item I'd like to touch on is testing. So we've dramatically increased the number of tests that we can and are able to perform across the county. There are two major testing efforts going on that the Public Health Department is involved in. The first is state-sponsored testing, which is in conjunction with OptumServe. And those sites, as you may already know, are located currently in Grover Beach and Paso Robles. Unfortunately, the level of testing in Paso Robles has been disappointing, despite the fact that that's where the majority of cases seems to be occurring. And because of that, and because of utilization levels that the state wants to see, we will be relocating that testing site, and that is going to move to San Luis Obispo at the Veterans Hall effective June 8th. In addition, we are working with another private nonprofit called U.S. Health Fairs for testing sites that allow us to see up to 240 individuals in a day. Thus far, we've used that to test at the California Men's Colony. Currently, they're here very close to the EOC at the Honor Farm, and we're currently focusing on county employees, the Department of Education, the Office of Education, I should say, and Cuesta College folks. And our next stop with that project is going to be in Cambria and Los Osos next week. Future stops are going to include Atascadero State Hospital and the homeless shelters, both in Atascadero and San Luis Obispo. And after that, we'll try and get out to Chandon and Napomo with that effort. In addition, we continue to assist and help give guidance with respect to testing and quarantine and isolation for cases that have come up at the California Men's Colony, as well as a couple of skilled nursing facilities across the county. And we've been very fortunate with the skilled nursing facilities. So those staff have tested positive at two different locations. Knock on wood, no residents have tested positive yet at any of our skilled nursing facilities. And we did respond rapidly to a cluster of cases that came up at the California Men's Colony. So fortunately, on our second round of testing, no additional inmates came up positive. So we were happy with that, how that went. But we now have another employee who's come up positive at CMC. So we're taking measures to address that. And that's resulting in additional testing of both inmates and employees. The next item I wanted to bring up is that the county received a small quantity of remdesivir, which is an antiviral drug that is the one agent with proven efficacy against COVID-19. We did receive a small quantity of remdesivir from the state. And one individual has been treated with a 5-day course of remdesivir thus far. And that has, the good news is that though the patient is still hospitalized, they have managed to stay out of the ICU. So that's good. The next items that I wanted to touch on relate to, so Mary Jean raised the question of how, can you think of some ways in which the Health Commission may be able to help the Public Health Department and the health agency in the setting of the COVID-19 pandemic? A couple of items that I could think of off the top of my head. One is childhood vaccination. So childhood vaccination rates have really plummeted in the setting of the COVID-19 pandemic, dropping from 40 to 60% across the state. And the AAP has actually started a national campaign that they're calling call your pediatrician, but the idea is really to try to get the message out to families to get their kids back on their routine vaccination schedules. That's a concern as things open back up as well, that we're not just at risk for a spike in the number of COVID-19 cases, but we're also at risk for other preventable diseases just because the vaccination rates are now so low. The next item, which I already touched on, is that although Paso Robles is clearly our hotspot in terms of COVID-19 cases, the level of testing that's happening in Paso Robles has been disappointing. So any message to encourage both social distancing and testing in Paso Robles would be helpful. The third item I wanted to touch on is again, social distancing. The idea being that social distancing often gets lost in a lot of the discussions that are happening around face coverings and masking. And regardless of whether individuals are wearing a face covering, the most effective measure is social distancing. So I think it's important to emphasize that we continue that. And the last item I wanted to touch on, which Penny actually addressed in the press conference today, is that what we consider to be high-risk groups remain high-risk groups, even as we're opening up parts of the economy. So folks 65 and older and those with other medical conditions, particularly immune compromise, are still at risk and are, you know, arguably at increased risk as things start to open up. And those, I think it would be helpful to continue to message restraint for those groups. And they should consider favoring, you know, staying home as much as possible, really until a vaccine is available. And that's basically all I have.
Okay. So I see Amy's hands up. So let's start the questions for Dr. Rosen. Mm. Amy, go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Rosen. I had two clarifying questions for you. The first was about the testing that you mentioned and the variants as well. Can you clarify if it's testing for COVID-19 or if it's testing for antibodies?
Yeah, great question. So all the testing that we are performing is PCR testing. So we haven't been involved in any serology to this point.
And my second question was, you mentioned some of the shortcomings in measuring the number of testing that you're looking at for state protocol for the Paso testing location and moving it to SLO. Can you talk a little bit more about what that looks like and why SLO was chosen?
Sure. So the state wants to see they want to see somewhere in the range of 60-85% utilization of each testing site. Paso, we're doing great in Grover Beach, so we've been around 80-85%. But Paso has been it's been closer to 50%. So at that point, the options are either lose a testing site or move it. So with that in mind, we're moving it to San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Sure.
Other questions? Jean, unmute yourself. There you go.
I was just wondering, are there clusters in Paso Robles, or what do you believe is the reason for the high numbers and the lack of testing? Is there some kind of theory?
Right. So, yeah, a lot of the cases have come up in you know, a fairly specific area of Paso Robles, and Ann McDowell has been working on mapping that. But I'm just surprised. I'm surprised that given that there are so many cases in Paso, that more people aren't getting tested there. And I think, you tell me, but I think that folks are aware of that in Paso. But despite that, you know, we're just not seeing the numbers that I would have expected. So we've made efforts to go out, especially in communities within Paso that have a higher prevalence of disease, and we've gone door to door in at least one apartment complex and done testing. But it would be nice to see folks get out, you know, of their own accord and get tested.
Interesting. Tamar?
Just to follow up on that, Dr. Rosen, have attempts been made to reach out to community leaders there, to religious community leaders, to sort of help spread the word and encourage people to get tested in that area specifically, or to...
Right. So we have done that through our public information officers. And we have utilized social media. We also, fairly early on, changed the testing criteria to... So initially, the idea was to try to reach out to high-risk groups. We changed that to open it up to everyone. That led to a small increase in the number of individuals who registered for testing. But, and in addition... county leadership has reached out to city leadership to try to increase the level of testing. Those measures haven't seemed to bear much fruit, but I don't think it's possible, but I'm not a directly aware of efforts to reach directly out to community leaders and or religious leaders, like you've suggested, which I think would be helpful.
I have a question. I actually live in Paso Robles. Yes, and I know that a lot of people, I mean, they haven't seen anything, so they haven't been exposed. They're staying at home. So those people are not getting tested. So I was just wondering if you're really focusing on the people that are maybe clustering and that you can see what the issues are. Because I know in my circle of friends, there is no one that I know of that has been exposed. So what prompts us to get tested?
Right. Yeah, I think that's a fair point. So we have made efforts to reach out in areas where it seems like the prevalence of disease is higher. The concern is, as things open back up, that there may be more spread, especially in North County.
Candace?
Dr. Rosen, thank you so much. I had a question about frequency that public health is advising for testing. So if you have people that are working with a vulnerable population, should they get tested every 2 weeks? Should they get tested every month? Like, what's the recommendation?
Right. So that's a very good question. So thus far, it's ranged from, in terms of guidance that I have seen, the range is from 1 week to every month. So if you're looking at skilled nursing facilities for surveillance testing just this week, the state came out with recommendations that all residents and staff of skilled nursing facilities be tested on a monthly basis. Which we haven't, that hasn't been put into operation yet. Those recommendations just came out. So I think that is probably the best guidance to look at if you're thinking about congregate settings.
Great, thanks. Just a quick follow-up. I know some people are concerned about testing if they haven't been exposed necessarily, but might work with vulnerable people because it's uncomfortable.
Right.
They've heard that it's uncomfortable. So I wonder if there's any plans to get some of the saliva tests or some of the other things here. I know it's still nasal swab, yeah.
So I do have some good news on that front. So we, until this week, we've exclusively been performing the nasopharyngeal swab. We've added this week the a nasal swab, so mid-turbinate swab, so it doesn't go as far back. It's not as uncomfortable. And the idea is that a nasal swab and a nasopharyngeal swab are equivalent, essentially, in the literature. So that is good news on that front. And an oropharyngeal swab is still an option. It's just that it's not, generally you don't, it's not as successful.
Not as sensitive, you know. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions? I see Sue is on, and I think Bob is on the phone as well. Do either of you have any questions for Dr. Rosen?
This is Bob. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Oh, terrific. I apologize for joining late. I was on Zoom. I could see you. I could see me. And I could get no audio on my new computer. So I've been dialing numbers frantically to get in. One question I've had about testing and the other issue right now that's so hot is masks in the community. And have we reached out or tried to contact all of the elected officials in the North County? It occurs to me it would be really helpful to see all of them in public, masked, in the paper. Because it's really a cultural thing in many ways. Have any efforts in that regard been made, Rick?
No.
So
thank you.
Not to interrupt you, Bob, but so that might be something for us to think about. Ginger, go ahead.
I have a question. Hi, Dr. Rosen.
Hello.
Hi. So I live in Pismo Beach, and we just had Memorial Day weekend, and there was quite a few people here, lots of people without masks. I did drive through downtown with my windows up, though, but it wasn't as packed as our typical summer where everything's, but the traffic was there. It seemed like everything was back to normal. So I was wondering, as the tourists do flood in here, is that going to slow down the progression of us opening, or are things going to, what kind of impact will that have?
Right. So it could, yes. It could slow us down in terms of progressing to stage three. So we should, about 7 to 10 days, we should see what kind of impact Memorial Day weekend has had on us. We're all kind of curious to see what the numbers are. It's unlikely that we would move back from where we are in stage two, but it could keep us from progressing to stage three.
Tamara, go ahead.
Just another question for you, Dr. Rosen. In terms of the medical community in the area, I assume that the attempts have been made to communicate with local practices around the issue you raised of vaccinations and just general COVID-19 guidance. Is there anything more that we might be able to do there and as a health commission, certainly to get the word out around vaccines. But I know that there's a lot of questions around, you know, parent circles of when is it safe to have their kids play and to, you know, take their kids to the doctor and all of that. And we've seen the updates that Dr. Borenstein has given around some of that. But there continues to be a bit of confusion there, or sometimes even with adults who've said, oh, I thought maybe I had COVID-19, but my doctor told me, if I don't have all the symptoms, to just stay home. So any sort of attempts at working with local practitioners to make sure that they have the right information and are sort of giving the same guidance, I guess, across practices?
Right. So we have been involved in communication with providers. That's a big part of what I do. And we have helped make sure that they have access to PPE, which was a concern for many of them. There are some cases, for example, with older providers who might not want to conduct something approximating business as usual. But for the most part, particularly pediatricians have been on board and also advocating for getting back to routine childhood immunizations. So I think the provider communication has gone reasonably well. And we've done a fair amount of that. I think a greater challenge is getting the message out to families to call their pediatricians.
Do you know if any attempts have been made with practices to do proactive outreach to their patients?
So I know a lot of. I know of specific instances of pediatric groups actively trying to reach out to their patients.
Well, and I suppose because the schools are all closed and have been for a while,
right,
the communication line is not quite as strong as it ordinarily would be as well.
Right.
But pediatricians do tend to get on board with the AAP. So if their campaign about calling your pediatrician or whatever, that might help some. But we might think about, I don't know, if we could do something also to reach out to some of those. Perhaps the more they hear it, we all tend to get on board when we hear it over and over and over and over again, as far as that goes. So, okay. Any questions from anybody? Yes,
suggestion with telemedicine. I have worked with my background's geriatrics, and the geriatricians are actually making telephone calls to the people at high risk, explaining where they're at the risk, what they should be doing, staying home. So maybe the pediatricians can start doing some of those actions where knowing people that are falling out and saying the importance of it, because if they hear from the physician, I mean, that's something maybe our, you know, Dr. Borenstein can convey, that maybe pediatricians can reach out. And I find that I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow, and, you know, she went through all the things that she needed. It was just a routine. I said, are you going to be taking us in? So it was the communication, I think, that's key, coming from the office, that's important. And thank you for all you're doing. I want to say our public health department has done a wonderful job.
They have, absolutely. We have to think of how we can do something for them at the end of this. They have absolutely been phenomenal. Our county, the numbers are just phenomenally low, and the communication has been wonderful. Now, I know, Jean, to what you were saying about telemedicine, and also Dr. Rosen, I've actually been busy during this time, because physicians are learning to do telemedicine, And we've gotten beyond that stage of that first week or so where CMS was coming out with different guidelines and different rules about what they wanted to do every day or so. So it's gotten much better. And we just did something recently about reopening and reinventing your practices. What we did, as Jean said, you have to, first of all, they have to let the patients know that they can do these things. And it's important that they're there. They need to do their vaccines and you know, get the appointments in or whatever, go through their appointment lists and what have you. I'm sure they all know that. That's probably something that the AAP is going to put in their guidelines as they're doing their program or whatever. But maybe as we come across individuals or instances, we can kind of bring that message home to some of the providers as well. So, good. Sue, any questions from you? I think she's still muted. Okay, well, please convey our appreciation to everybody at Public Health, Dr. Bornstein and yourself. You've both done a phenomenal job, but the whole Public Health Department, and Mike as well. I understand Mike has just gotten into the distribution industry, and he might get a second career for himself. But you've all done a phenomenal job in keeping the community informed and so forth. And part of why we did want to meet this evening was to hear what's going on, what the latest has been, and we do want to know how we can, you know, help you out the best way possible. So to that end, let me ask Tamar and Candace, I believe they're our co-chairs for our Community Education Committee, would you want to put together some kind of a COVID-19 subcommittee and come up with some ways that we might support the Public Health Department? Didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I saw the thumb go up for Candace.
That's great.
Identify some community organizations that maybe we should, and since Jean lives up in Paso, you know, pull your resources together to see where we might reach out to some other people and take care of some of those things. And then let us, you know how we could help. Certainly communicate with Dr. Rosen and Dr. Bornstein to see where they think that we could, you know, best be of help. If we, you know, financing is always an issue for us, but we can find a way to do some kind of social media stuff or whatever. Tamar is wonderful with social media stuff anyway. So, are you willing to do that? And Commissioner Camnell, did you want to step in and say something?
Am I on?
You are on, yes.
I think that's a terrific idea, Jean. We really need to get out into the community and, again, get our community leadership involved. Mm-hmm. So it's a terrific idea.
Okay. So I'll leave it up to the two of you. I'm certainly willing to help, as I'm sure everybody is. And Ginger has a wide resource of, don't you go out to a lot of clinics, Ginger?
Yeah, I work in 3 different clinics.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I'm now in the endocrinology office as well for Tenet Health, and then also their OBGYN, and then a primary care.
So I think, you know, among the commission ourselves, we might be able to come up with quite a lengthy resource list as far as that goes. But we need to take that first step and go with it. Okay. Good. Well, again, Rick, thank you for being with us this evening. We appreciate it very much. And you'll be hearing from us, I think, probably. Okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
All right. So do any of the commissioners have any updates? Any of your committees been meeting during this time frame? I know the Oral Health Commission has had a couple of Zoom meetings. The Tobacco Coalition hasn't met, but they have an event coming up on Sunday. I think it's National No Smoke Day. So they're encouraging people to do something on their own at a local park or a local center or something, clean up, and then post a picture of that. And then I believe there's free ice cream from Doug Bernstein afterwards. Okay. Candace, did you have...
I do. The Naloxone Action Team had a Zoom meeting, and we are pretty concerned to really keep track of overdose in the community. There's been an uptick of overdose with COVID-19 in the Bay Area, and we want to make sure that people are comfortable responding to overdose, that they still get a lot of naloxone out in the community to the high-risk places. So programs at the jail has not been operating, but Dr. Mulcairn there has been giving naloxone to everyone on release. So that is awesome. We don't know how many people take it. We really don't know. Like, we're trying to figure it out. But at least anyone who wants it can get it. And it comes with, you know, a training brochure so that they would know how to use it to reverse an overdose. The syringe exchange has been operating every week still from 5:30 to 8:30 on Wednesdays. So they're open right now. And they're also pushing out as much naloxone as people want to try to make sure that we stay ahead of any kind of a uptick in overdose in the community. I think we had a report from the AmeriCorps Vista, who works with the Opioid Safety Coalition, and mostly due to COVID, like, we're not going to have a convening, you know, like a lot has been canceled, but we are really trying to focus on the overdose piece.
Oh, good. Thank you for that. Anyone else? Okay. I don't think we have any regular committee reports, but if somebody does, go ahead and jump in. We'd like to hear from you. Maybe at our next meeting, and we're not sure when that would be, and it will probably be a Zoom meeting again, but we would like to meet next month in June. We might think about pushing it back just 1 week, only because a regular scheduled meeting is just 2 weeks from now. Anybody have a problem with that, Candace? Jean? Nobody? Okay. Well, Mike will, not putting you on the spot here, Mike. Mike will probably send out maybe a survey of dates again to see what works for all of us before we do that. I mean, June typically starts vacation, but I don't know how many of us are going to be going anyplace this year. Okay.
I will send out a poll by the end of the week to all the commissioners.
Okay, good. Yeah, we have some housekeeping things we just have to catch up on next month also about, you know, we got a couple of commission seats open yet. We have some minutes from a few months ago that we need to go through and make sure that they're okay. So we just have some cleanup to do as far as that goes. And we're coming up on the end of the fiscal year too, as far as that goes. So, good. All right. Well, once again, thank you all for joining us this evening. Does anybody have anything else before we adjourn for the evening? Mike, do you have anything for us?
No, ma'am.
Okay, good. All right. Well, have a good rest of your evening. Again, thank you for joining us. Take care. Stay safe.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.